Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Hey y'all, part two of the Saturday, May 21st, 2022 edition here on the Chase Thomas Podcast, coming at you, the Atlanta Sports Guys with Max Markovich and Garrett Chapman to talk all things, yeah, you guessed it, Atlanta sports. We hit on a lot of stuff on this edition of the podcast, so it's great to have the guys back on the pod after a couple weeks away with conflicting schedules and this, that, and the other. So glad that the Atlanta sports guys could all reconvene this week. We revisited the draft, which pick we're most excited about after a couple weeks, the 2022 schedule and how it looks for the Falcons, Ty Washington of Kentucky getting put in a situation where he was mocked to the Hawks in a new NBA mock draft. So we talked about that. What we learned from Trey on JJ's podcast, a player season review for Clint Capella, and then why the Braves are still struggling at this point in the season as we get closer and closer to Jim. So all that and more coming up on part two here on the Chase Thomas Podcast, the Saturday, May 21st, 2022 edition. Thank you guys for sticking around on today's show. And if you missed it and you just saw this one, don't forget that earlier in the same feed, you can check out Go Big Orange Friday if you want to catch up on all things Tennessee Vols. That's also on this feed. So go check that out if you've not already done so. Everything on YouTube, go subscribe to our YouTube channel, the Chase Thomas Podcast, right there on YouTube. Let's continue to add subscribers there. That would be great. Tweet at me at Chase_Thomas. Like the Facebook page at facebook.com/ChaseThomasWriter. Email me at ChaseThomasPodcast@gmail.com. And of course, leave this show a 5-star rating and a review if you're an Apple Podcast or Spotify listener right now. That'd be great. All right, part two coming up. Uncle Darren, let's go.
Chase Thomas Podcast. The Chase Thomas Podcast. My nephew needs me to record. See, I already hate it.
All right, what's up, everybody? Welcome back to Hour 2 here on the Chase Thomas Podcast, where I am now joined by one other Atlanta sports guy, Max Markovich, but Garrett Chapman is going to be here, we think, at some point on this edition of the podcast. But there's one thing, as Max and I alluded to before we hit the record button, was that Atlanta traffic, especially Midtown on a Friday afternoon, it moves, and navigating it, it's easy, right?
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure he'll be here in a few hours, days, weeks. We'll see.
Midtown is it. I don't know if it's the worst traffic jam in Atlanta in the afternoon, but Midtown is more frustrating because you can go like a mile and a half, and it takes you an hour plus. Like, it's just the distance. It's you think to yourself when you're going through Midtown, it would have been better to walk. That's not how it is. Like, if you're on 400 or something, you're out of luck. But like Midtown, you think about, I could have saved time just by walking and breaking a sweat than trying to navigate this.
I think it's the maximum, like, I want to pull my hair out and scream at every possible person in front of me, and I hate my life, and cars suck. That's, like, it might not be the worst, but it maximizes that feeling.
I think this is, I mean, the traffic is the number one reason I may never go back to Atlanta full time, is now that I've been conditioned to life without Atlanta traffic and Knoxville and being in a college town again, it's just, I imagine Ann Arbor is the same way, where there's not a bunch of traffic. The amount of time wasted in Atlanta traffic. And I mean, I was even in the city. I was in Virginia Highlands forever, but like, if you want to go anywhere outside of the Highlands, you're just kind of out of luck, man. And I'm not built for it anymore. I'm not built for the traffic. I would lose my mind if I jumped right back into it full time.
No, dude. And it's also like, you can't go anywhere without a car. Mm-hmm. Like, you can't do anything without driving there. And so, I mean, that's why traffic is so bad, obviously. But like, if you wanted to walk, even if it happened to miraculously be a beautiful day in Atlanta in May, you just can't do it. And that is definitely, it's number one on the anti-Atlanta detractions.
There you go. But Max Markovich is here. He's freshly graduated since his last appearance here on the Atlanta Sports Guys. So congratulations to you, sir, on getting a normal graduation in Ann Arbor. Was it weird to go back after all this time?
It was and it wasn't. Like, it felt very, like, you were transformed. Like, I was turning back the clock 3 years, and I was back in college for 2 days, you know, which is, I feel like everyone kind of needs after a few years out of it. But it didn't feel at all like a graduation. It felt like a reunion, which, you know, was what I needed. There was no sentimentality of a graduation. It was all just like the fun of a reunion.
Yeah, because you're already done. Like, the graduation feel is over. It's not like you have this release of getting done with your last classes and finals and everything. You're just out of that mindset.
Yeah, totally. And it's, you know, for some people it was closure. For me, it was just like, all right, like, that was fun. It was a fun weekend, and now we're back in life.
There you go. Yeah, no, I'm excited. I've finished up this week. This week has just been a whirl. This has been one of the longer weeks of my life, just with the amount of time I was doing with school and the pod and everything else. It was just, this has been a long, long week. I was at the Knoxville airport for the fiance at 4:30 in the morning on Thursday, and just,
there you go, the fiance.
The fiance.
Speaking of major life changes, you've had actual real ones.
Graduation. Have we not recorded since I got engaged?
No, we have not.
So it's been 3 weeks.
2 weeks.
Goodness gracious.
I think 2 weeks.
Is it 2 weeks? I don't know. When did I get engaged? Was that 2 weeks ago? What's today? The 20th?
I think we recorded right before the day.
It had to be the day before because I got engaged that Saturday. Yes. Okay. That makes sense. That's right. Yeah. So she said, yes, we're good. But yeah, it's kind of wild. If you had told me that before I moved up here for school that I would get engaged or be married before I finished grad school, I would have laughed in your face. But
that is wild.
Yeah, it's a wild, wild thing. But this fall, man, I don't even want to think about it day to day, brick by brick, one day at a time, because I'll just have a full-on meltdown if I think about my fall. Because
yeah, the one thing you need in your life is more stuff going on.
The amount of stuff, I feel bad because I'm just very grateful that my mom is like all about helping the wedding planning, because I have no space for it, where I just, whatever you want is cool with me. Like, I am good. I don't have the space to just do the back and forth where it's like, I can't do the questions. I do the Nick Saban thing where I'm like, I only can make so many decisions and so many thoughts a day. I can't have a take. I don't have a take on just about anything with the wedding. I'm good.
Did you see what Dustin Johnson said about, like, someone asked him how much, you know, whether he would like putting in effort with the wedding or anything like that? He said he spent about like a half an hour.
And it's not because I don't love her. It was just that I don't want to be involved. It's not my day. It's just, I'll be there when I need to be there. I'll pick a suit, I guess. But if you want to pick my colors, go ahead. But I just know it's either going to be in the mountains in Tennessee or in the farms in Tennessee. That's what we're down to. So I'm excited either way. But yeah, this fall, Tennessee schedule, graduation, and my last semester, and getting married. Very normal. And then, of course, this and what we got going on here. Speaking of what we got going on here, Atlanta Sports Guys, a lot has happened. There's a lot to cover with Atlanta Sports right now. And I want to start, Max, with the Falcons. Now that you've had a few weeks since the NFL draft took place, I want to ask you, and a lot of good stuff, like Locked On Falcons has done some good player reviews. So shout out to Aaron Freeman for that. Gaining good insight. Will McFadden had a good piece on Jalen Hawkins and the Falcoholic the other day that I read that I liked that y'all should go check out. But now that you've had a couple weeks, Max, what pick excites you the most? What are you most excited about 2 weeks after the fact?
It's funny. I think day of, I would have easily said Arnold Ebiketie, just because I feel like that is the exact type of guy the Falcons haven't taken in the second round ever. Mm. Like, they went up, they got their guy. He is a plug and play. You can see how it's going to work. Like, he is ready to get 8 sacks next year. Mm. And, like, with the athleticism and potential for more, right? He might still be the pick I'm most excited about, but God, it's so damn intriguing, everything you hear about Desmond Ridder. Like, it's hard for that not to be the answer because, like, if he hits, that's like a that's a franchise changing pick.
Mm.
Like, to take a franchise quarterback in the third round completely changes your outlook for 20 years. Mm. And I'm not saying, like, and the beauty of it is because he's a third round pick, there's really no downside. If he sucks, that's okay. Like, it doesn't really change the trajectory of this team. They'll be picking top 5, 3, 1 next year and can likely take a quarterback if they need to. But it's like this flyer that there's room to see if it works. If it doesn't work, that's okay. And the upside is so damn high that, like, the possibility of that being, you know, a diamond in the rough Russell Wilson kind of third round hit is so exciting. Like, I think, because this year is a total flyer year. Mm. And, like, I think the idea of, first of all, everything you hear about him is, like, great locker room guy, total leader, you know, charisma, all the, like, cliche shit that you want to hear about your quarterback that you just drafted.
Mm-hmm.
But I think, like, throughout the draft process, it was clear that he's also, like, been the most pro-ready guy. Like, the guy who could step in and could lead a team and has all the, like, intangible stuff that makes you want to believe. And obviously the record of quarterbacks in the second, third, fourth round is not good.
Mm-hmm.
But just the idea of that being a flyer instead of, like, the 8th overall pick or even the 43rd overall pick, it just excites me more. The way I've looked at it is it doesn't hinder you from doing anything you otherwise could have or would have done. Mm-hmm. Like, if you had taken Malik Willis at 8 or Desmond Ridder at 8, that really prohibits you from taking a quarterback in the first round next year. You've invested your job, if you're Terry Fondo, in this guy. And you take all of that out of it when he's in the third round.
Yeah.
So I'm excited for that. And I think I'm excited. I'm weirdly excited for what this offensive skill position group is starting to look like. The cupboard was bare going into the draft on that front. But now when you look at it and you say, okay, you have Drake London to go with Kyle Pitts. You have Cordarrelle Patterson. You have Tyler Allgeier, who I really like in this system. You have Bryan Edwards, who you get for nothing, a talent like that for nothing. And you have Ridder, you have Mariota, and it's, like, interesting. Like, it's not good. Like, you're not going to be good. But there's a lot of guys that I'm, like, intrigued by. That, you know, if London and Pitts are, like, the dynamic duo, big receiver prototype that Arthur Smith champions. Like, that is your foundation, and then you can build off that. If Tyler Allgeier is a sixth round bowling ball running back, like it looks like he could be, like, you've finally done the one thing that we've been screaming for the Falcons to do for 10 years, which is just take flyers in the late rounds. Don't sign these aging veterans, right?
Yeah.
And you still have Cordarrelle Patterson to work with, who was really good for most of last year in all sorts of ways. You know, you can move him around and the versatility of that. So it was a long answer, but I think on draft night it was Ebiketie, and I'm still very excited about Ebiketie. But it's pretty intriguing now to just, like, think about what Ridder could be.
Now there we got Garrett Chapman entering the fold. I agree. Garrett, you did not hear everything Max just laid out here, but the question was, ultimately, now that we've had a couple weeks to process and think about the picks the Falcons ultimately made, which pick are you most most excited by a couple weeks after, because Max went a different route than you might think. He went Desmond Ridder.
I'm all aboard in the Desmond Ridder pick. I caught the tail end of what he was saying there. And I was up at Flowery Branch and was able to talk to some of these guys. And Desmond Ridder, when I say the guy said all the right things, he absolutely did. And he really controlled the team, too. I understand it was like just rookie mini camp and everything, and take it with a grain of salt. But he really commanded the offense and kind of had the respect of his teammates very early on. And it wasn't like a barking orders kind of way. It was just like a he talks, they listen kind of thing. And yeah, it's early. I'm not going to put any, too much stock into that necessarily, but it's enough. Like he said, when you take a quarterback like that in the third round, who's a bona fide winner, who we talked to Luke Fickell, and he said all the same things. And it's just the guy is just consistent, and he's a good locker room presence. At the very least, he's going to be a solid backup. And for a third round pick, that's fantastic. But in terms of your question, are you looking long term, short term? What are we thinking here?
Well, I think it's hard to even extrapolate long term on a lot of these guys right now. I think it's just more short term and who could make the biggest. Well, I guess for me, it just really depends on who you're thinking about. Because for me, like, it's Tyler Morgan. Like, I am really interested because Georgia fans were really upset that N'Kobe Dean was not the pick there.
Sure.
And there was a huge discrepancy between Georgia fans who wanted N'Kobe Dean and then all the folks who were draft nuts were like, oh, this dude's an animal and just an athletic machine and just the modern type of linebacker that you want who's good in coverage and doesn't know what he's doing yet with his body, but he's going to be good enough. And he's like a, I want to say, didn't he play quarterback or something?
Troy Anderson.
What did I say?
No, he was, you said something Morgan. I was like, I know who you're talking about. No,
Troy Anderson. I'm losing my
mind. Troy Anderson was an all-conference player at quarterback. He rushed for over 2,000 yards as a running back. And then he hurt his foot. He wasn't going to play in the 2020 season, but Montana State didn't play anyway. So it didn't make a difference. But after that, they moved him to inside linebacker full time, and he was first team all conference. I mean, the dude can do literally everything. And actually, after talking to him, I kind of got the feeling that it's like, you know, the analogy that I used was like talking to Clark Kent versus Superman. You look at him on the field, and the dude is just a freak, where he's running around, sprinting in circles, going 100 miles an hour, taking people's heads off. And then you talk to him, and he's just a normal, docile guy. Really cool, easygoing, very relaxed. But on the football field, that dude is a menace. But as far as looking forward, like who I'm most excited about, I think Troy Anderson's one of those guys I'm kind of excited about. He's kind of I think he really could be a diamond in the rough kind of player, who in a couple of years' time, you're like, how did this guy fall into the second round? But Evan Cady is another one of those guys. I know everyone's talking about Drake London, and he's going to take all the fanfare because eighth pick overall. I mean, of course, that's going to take a lot of attention. But Evan Cady comes in. He fills an immediate need at pass rush. And I mean, look, this is a defense that had 18 sacks last year. And if he just comes out and gets six, all of a sudden you're light years better than you were last year, because you have D'Angelo Malone from Western Kentucky. He should come in, be a little speed rusher on the other side. Lorenzo Carter, he's a great player who I think these guys can lean on. But Ebikadi is like going to be the guy. Maybe not early on in the season, but he will be by the end of the season. I'm very confident in that. And the dude is a fantastic football player. He was at Temple. He was at Penn State. And the dude, he can do everything. He's good against the run. He's tough. He'll be on the field pretty much the whole game. So he's going to be a three-down player. And I really like that. That's not something that we've had here in Atlanta for a very long time that's consistent. I mean, even going back to the 2016 season when you had 15.5 sacks out of Vic Beasley, he wasn't a three-down player. He was a guy who's just a speed rusher who can get to the quarterback, and he mostly played cleanup. Evan Cady's a wrecker. So he's going to come in and punch somebody in the mouth and actually disrupt plays. And the only other person we have on this team who can do that is Grady Jarrett. So having somebody like that, that's going to be a big deal.
Go ahead, Max.
Go ahead. Well, I was just going to say, I think the more I thought about the draft, and we talk a lot about positional value, and I think that was our main gripe with London at eight. But the more I think about that, had the Falcons gone positional value strictly at eight and taken, let's just say, Jermaine Johnson or Charles Cross. But let's stick with Jermaine Johnson for the edge receiver duo. If they had taken Jermaine Johnson at eight and like Christian Watson early in the second, Is that a better haul than Drake London and Arnold Ebiketie? Like, I don't think anyone would say it is. And so I think the Falcons really let the draft come to them in terms of value. That's how you get Ridder in the third and like, don't reach for him earlier than that. And that's how you get, like, you can be excited about London without saying a receiver is going to fix everything. And that's what I like most about this draft is they hit on everything and they can use everyone on their own timeline. If Troy Anderson's not ready, he does not have to play right away. If Arnold Ebiketie's ready to be a for number one edge, step on up. There's plenty of room. if Drake London's ready to catch 80 balls next year, he's going to catch 80 balls next year. And I think that's what's most exciting, I think, about where the Falcons are is, like, they can do whatever. Next year's a flyer year.
Yeah, I actually saw somebody post on Twitter. It says, what defines a successful season for the Atlanta Falcons in 2022? I don't know if you guys saw that.
Mm-mm.
Yeah, I saw Kelsey responded, 1-2 wins and a top pick. Yeah, well, true. Then we can go get Will Anderson and really be good, be very good.
Mm-hmm.
Or any of the quarterbacks that come out next year. But look, Max, I think you hit it, or you at least started to touch on it, where it's like these guys are going to have lots of reps and lots of playing time just out of necessity, because this team has so much dead cap that they can't really go out and go get veterans and go get guys to, outside of just putting like the caulk in the cracks and sanding it over, just seeing what you can get from them. And I mean, this is not going to be a very good football team. I think it's a very well-coached team. And I want to see the development of these players. So that's really all I want to see in this 2022 season. I mean, I have very low expectations as far as the win-loss side of it. Mm-hmm. But as far as actual development, I'm very confident in what Arthur Smith does. And look, this season is not defined by wins. This season is defined by how does the team look in those losses or in those wins. But I'm excited.
Well, I think my
team.
Emotional investment will depend on what the Ridder Mariota situation turns out to be. Because if Ridder wins this job in camp this summer, because it's not like they paid Mariota this kind of starter money. He is still getting paid backup money in Atlanta, and they're okay with Ridder winning the job. You still don't take Ridder in the third round if you don't have a plan in place where you're like, this is an open competition, and it's an open competition between two seemingly the nicest dudes in this league. So we're gonna just have the nicest quarterback room, which is great. But I'm curious to see what happens there, because if it's Mariota for 17 games and Ridder doesn't do enough in camp and Mariota stays healthy, then it's just the emotional investment where I'm like, this is 1,000% a flyer year. This is a year where Mariota is just the prototypical bridge guy, and I'm not going to get emotionally invested in that. However, if Ridder wins outright, we have a Dak Prescott kind of situation or a Russell Wilson. I'm hesitant to throw the Russell Wilson comps just because Wilson is a first ballot Hall of Famer.
I regret having brought that up earlier. Yeah, I don't want to invoke that.
But
we don't need
other people are doing that. It's just third rounder.
Which is why it's irresponsible of me to have done so. I like Dak Prescott a lot more as a, like, this is the high upside.
Right. And the guy who, he didn't flash any of the stuff other than like the leadership. That was the first thing you heard about Dak, was just dudes are drawn to Dak, and that guy's a leader. He puts his body on the line. He's just someone that you believe you can win with and rallies the troops. And it seems like that's who Desmond is too, where dude just won a plethora of games in Cincinnati and just was, I think he's like
broke
second in wins. Is he second in wins in college football history? I think he's behind
he's right
Case
there.
Keenum.
He's right there.
And Case Keenum was in college for like 17 years. So I'm curious to see what happens there, because if it is Ridder, then we have to go, okay, every week we have to look at this extremely tough, because if he's okay, then we're in a weird spot going into the draft next year. If he's really good, it's like, okay, we're cooking. You see the young core of Ridder, London, and Pitts, and you're suddenly like, okay, this is fun. If that's the thing, and we're starting anew, and this is like the ground floor, and we can build something here and watch Ridder go through his rookie lumps and all that kind of stuff. But I think that's where I'm at. Is it just, I'm interested to see what happens there, and that will dictate where we should see the season, because it's totally different perspectives depending on who's under center.
Well, we also saw like what it could be, and I don't know if this is an upside or a downside, is like he could be Davis Mills. And then like you saw that with Houston. They passed on quarterback this entire draft. Having said that, would they have passed on quarterback if C.J. Stroud and Bryce Young were available?
Hmm.
I don't know. I kind of doubt it, but I don't know. Like, you know, they really like Davis Mills. Davis Mills had a better year than expected. Like, that to me is like, if he's Davis Mills, you're in a middle ground, but it's not necessarily a bad one.
Where you're not married to him.
Yeah, if you love one of those quarterbacks, you're not wedded to that guy. If you, you know, you have concerns and also you're like, I want to take Will Anderson. Like, I don't think anyone would complain about that. But I think going back to your point about what I'm most excited about for this entire season, maybe, is like, if Desmond Ridder comes out of training camp with the job, that will mean he has earned it. Like, no one's handing him that job. And so that means if he's earned it, like, it's time to get pretty excited about what that means.
Right.
But it's also like, if they had taken him eighth, I keep going back to that, there probably would have been some sort of pressure to, like, push him to getting those reps, right? And you don't have to do that. On the flip side, you know, if he doesn't win it and he doesn't earn it and he doesn't play really that much all year, like, I think that tells you a little bit about his progression. And then your understanding of that going into the next year's draft and your options are what they are. So that's I mean, the excitement is at quarterback, I think, just because of what that will mean for the future.
Do you think fans would be okay with Desmond Ridder being the long-term option for the Falcons?
Yeah, I mean, if he wins, like, I don't think fans care. If you're a winner and...
See, I don't know if that's true, because Matt Ryan was winning. He would come off seasons where he was winning a lot of football games, and this fan still wanted him replaced, you know?
I think you're always going to have some...
You're talking about a vocal minority.
Yeah, that's what I would say, too.
I guess I am. I guess I hear this vocal minority all the time, just where I work, so right. I hear them constantly. They're very loud, so...
Most of Matt Ryan's career in Atlanta, I would guess his approval rating among Falcons fans was around 70, between 70 and 80%, I think.
You know, and I think most quarterbacks would live with numbers like that.
Absolutely.
But there's always going to be that person who's going to be like, yeah, well, I mean, at least we should go get, like, Patrick Mahomes, and you want that talent level where it's like, people think this just sort of, like, grows on trees, but, I mean, Desmond Ridder is a very exciting and very enticing, like, option, you know, for this team. Just as I want to see what he does. I really want to see what he does, and I want to see what the power running game does. And I heard you guys touching on Algier just a little bit and how he fits into this scheme. That's what Arthur Smith wants to do. Ragone wants to do that. They want to run the football and establish it. And we really didn't have the guys to do that. We thought we had Mike Davis, who was going to be able to do something like that, but nah, he just didn't really work out. So Algier is a guy who I think can come in here and take some reps, and I'm really looking at that this year. I want to see what they can do there, because if they can establish a running game, it was pretty porous last year. I mean, where did we rank, like 28th or something like that in football? Like, I can't imagine it was any higher than 25th, just overall. So I expect that to change a little bit this year. And then just I'm going to be looking at this offensive line too. I think Mayfield will be the biggest leap. As far as progression goes, generally comes from year one to year two. The bar is quite literally the floor for him, so he can't get much worse. So as long as he can just become a competent left guard, all of a sudden this running game is going to get a lot better. So that's the other thing I'm looking at there.
But you can't pencil that in. We have no idea. Like, he might just be terrible.
It's very much in pencil. Yeah. It's not in pen, because Schaefer is a mauler. He's kind of slow. He's not the most athletic guy, so I don't know if he's going to take reps from Mayfield early necessarily, but as far as a run blocker, I mean, the dude's a mauler, and he's going to rip somebody's face off, so we'll see what happens with it. I'm interested. That's one of the battles that I'm going to be watching a lot at Flowery Branch this summer.
Yeah, while you're roasting out there in the sun. I've been to a couple of those in the sun.
My pale ass, man, it's going to be brutal. I'll be at SPF 75 or 85 or something.
You
like
need to be at SPF 100. What are we talking about? What are we doing? You need to be in the triple digits, sir.
Look at that, man.
Like, what am I looking at?
Exactly. Freckles? I just reflect the sun, yeah.
I think the Falcons season is all about, like, the Falcons are entirely questions right now. And the season is all about how many answers you can find. And, like, if Jalen Mayfield sucks, like, that's an answer. Like, the answer is he's not the answer, right? And so you can go in with your plethora of resources next offseason, and, like, you need a replacement, and that's your answer. And I think that's what's exciting. Like, we don't know anything about this football team. We know nothing. And we're going to get some answers.
It's kind of exciting, though.
Yeah.
It's kind of exciting. This is, like, the first time in 15 years, really, that since Matt Ryan has been quarterback that we've – really not known and just gone into a season like, hey, we're not going to win football games, so let's see what we can get. You know, because as long as he was here, it was like there was always like this in the back of your head, even if you didn't win a lot of football games that year, it was in the back of your head. It was like, hey, we could compete in every game we play. And that's just really not the case anymore. And that's it's kind of refreshing almost to an extent because, I don't know, it's just a new returning a new leaf. And I'm excited.
We say that until the losses pile up. Everyone says this until...
Once the losses pile, then I'm going to be frustrated. I'm going to get frustrated. I know I will, but...
Mm-hmm.
I don't think anything about this season will possibly make it worse than last season.
Like, no, last season was about as...
Last season, we won 7 games last year. I had no fun watching. None.
It was
zero
miserable.
Fun. And I can tell you, like, we might win 2 games this year. But, like, if Desmond Ridder's kind of frisky, like, I will have more fun than I had watching the Falcons last year. And that should signal that...
Hold on. I love the Saints game, and I loved...
Beating the Saints with that Cordarrelle Patterson shot down the right side of the
you're
field?
You're right. That was
the high. I watched that with one of my best friends who's also a diehard Saints fan, and I got to shove that into his face as the reason they missed the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
So, awesome. It didn't get any better than that. So that was the highlight of the season. Low side of the season was getting absolutely demolished by the Patriots.
The Patriots game was the lowest point.
That was horrible.
It was miserable. But I mean,
Mac Jones
like the
just
lows
carving us up 3 yards
at
a time. That was one of the most painful football games I've watched in my life.
Death by a thousand blows.
And then the Bills game was fun, back and forth. And
that was a good game.
I enjoyed
that game. They should have won that game.
Yeah. Quickly, because Max has to go soon. So we got to quickly, one last thing on the Falcons. The schedule came out since our last recording. A lot of people are looking at that and like, oh, where's the best position for the Falcons? What's the most interesting stretch? The early stretch looks looks painful for the Atlanta Falcons, but we'll learn a lot pretty quickly, I think, which is actually good that we'll learn pretty early on. But Garrett, do you have a stretch of games that you've already circled that most intrigue you for the calendar?
I mean, they're going to lose a lot of them, so I think they're favored in 2. I think when the Bears come to town and then the Panthers, they're like plus 1 or something like that. So, and it's just a home game against a bad division rival, so you're gonna split that anyway. But no, not really. I know in the early stretch, like in September, you have the Saints, the Rams, and the Seahawks, and those are 3 of the best run defense teams in the NFL, or at least they'll be very, very good. And I think the identity that Arthur Smith wants to establish, at least in the coming years, maybe not necessarily this year, but I think they're starting to lay the groundwork for it, is the rushing attack. And I want to see what he can do after a full camp and everything. Who steps up? Where does the offense come from? Is it Algier? Do they go back to Patterson? I mean, Damian Williams, is he going to step in and be a guy? I don't think he will, but I want to see what the rookie does. But that's really the most interesting stretch of games, but mostly because it's like you have the Rams, and the Rams are just going to go after Marcus Mariota, assuming that he is the starter for that game. And I'll see if he makes it out of the month of September. Just with his injury history, he hasn't played a full season, like 5 years? So, to answer your question, long story short, no, not really. There's not a stretch of games that this team is really going to excite me. Any game that we can learn something.
What about you, Max?
I'm excited. This is going to happen. Let me play this out. Ridder's going to win the job out of camp. And week 1, Mercedes-Benz against the Saints. I have really enjoyed this offseason, the Saints trying to convince themselves that they can be contenders with this roster / version without a teardown. I would really, really enjoy just like beating the Saints week 1 after we went through the painful like tear down, start over, and they were like, "Nah, we're just gonna go. We're gonna double down on cap hell. We're contenders. We're gonna trade future picks. Chris Olave is the answer." Like, I think that is ludicrous that they think they can win anything this year. Pick off Jameis twice. Falcons win. Ridder plays, you know, a really promising opener. Like, that would be awesome. And we'd still lose a lot of games. Like, the next stretch is really hard. One more game I want to put on the radar is Cleveland comes to Atlanta, I think week 4 or 5. High chance Deshaun suspended for that game, but in the event he's not, that'll be an interesting one for a number of reasons. And I would enjoy winning that game as well.
You could not pay me enough money to come in the building for that one if he's cleared to play. You could offer me
like
a couple grand. Like,
Would he get like a standing ovation? Like,
I don't know. That's what concerns me.
Standing ovation. He won't.
He would get cheered a lot.
I think he would. He'd
get cheered. I mean, yeah, there are a lot of quarterbacks this year. That's probably the most interesting thing, though. Like, yeah, I think you started touching on is like the amount of quarterbacks that come into this place, into the Bins. There are a lot of them. I mean, there are a lot of good teams that are coming into the Bins. So that'll be fun to watch.
Mm. Win week one, beat Cleveland, go 2-15, get the first pick.
Does this team kind of remind you this season of last year's Lions? Just like a tiny bit.
I like that. I like the idea behind that.
You know, because I mean, like they didn't win games, but
I think that,
they fought like hell. Yeah. You know, I hate that. That's such a football thing to say, but they really did, and they sucked, but they sucked in the best way possible. If that makes sense.
I think what I want most out of this year is to feel good about Arthur Smith, and that's what Detroit got out of Dan Campbell last year. And I think like if that's the case, like that, it will have been an overwhelmingly successful year. However we define like Arthur Smith did a good job, like that is the number one thing I want.
Dan Campbell is the most Dan Quinn person without being Dan Quinn. Bald. He's bald. He's a rah-rah dude. He's freaking yoked.
Dan Quinn.
He literally checks all the boxes. Just the epitome of a football dude.
The Hawks. So Trey went on the JJ Redick podcast this week. That was a highly anticipated appearance for him. This was interesting because what we were wondering this offseason, and I think we talked about it a few weeks back, but the fact that the Hawks went out the way they did against the Heat was actually a good thing. And that Trey going through the growing pains there was a good thing, that he did not go off and go for 40 every night and the Hawks still lose, where the way we would have to look at this offseason would be very different, and Schlenk would be, I think, under more pressure if that were the case, internally, if Trey was going off and Trey goes like, hey, I did everything I could and we still couldn't do it, I need help, you didn't do anything this past year, you ran it back with these guys and it didn't work, this has to change now or we have some problems long term. Instead, the Heat played him differently defensively, and the Heat we've seen just put clamps on everybody this postseason. It's not unique to Trey that when they turn it on like they did against the Celtics in the third quarter in game one, like there's just not a whole lot you can do, and Trey will get better. He'll learn from it, all that good stuff. But what did y'all make of Trey's appearance on JJ's podcast?
I know that he doesn't like he loves the Knicks.
Mm-hmm.
That definitely got all the attention. I haven't listened to the full thing yet. I've caught clips of it. But it's the fact that he just lives rent-free in the heads of every Knicks fan in the city of New York, and how that's just remains one of the funniest damn things on the planet, or at least in the sport of basketball, that you have an entire city that hates him so much that they chant F Trae Young at a Yankees game or at a concert or in the subway or anything, and how Trae Young just sort of lives off of it. And another thing was the fact that they both were, I mean, really they're both villains to an extent through the sport of basketball. I mean, JJ Redick was the epitome of a Duke, like one of those Duke guys who everybody loved to hate. But he was just a stud, and there's like only so much that you could ever do to him. But it was just sort of like that connection that they had for a second, like being an 18, 19, 20 year old kid and going into hostile arenas where people are chanting at you and calling you out. And Trae Young talked about how he went home to Lubbock, Texas, when Texas Tech took to play Texas Tech. And he thought he was going to come in, and people were like, oh, yeah, you're from here. Yeah, you had friends in the stands. And he had one side that was chanting, fuck you, and then the other one's like, fuck you, Trae Young. And then it was just that's tough for a 20-something. I can't imagine going through something like that. And how that just establishes such a chip on your shoulder, and how it just becomes the identity of Trae Young. And there's nobody better to talk to him about it than JJ Redick. And so, I mean, I'm excited to listen to the whole thing. It's going to be very interesting. But it's just the progression of Trae. And it's like, what's that next step for him? After leading the league in both points and assists, the sky's the limit.
I want to Ray Young memoir highlighting Trae's upbringing. That would be first ballot.
I guarantee you he'll write. He's just like a couple steps short of LeVar Ball. So
I'm not going that far, but he just loves his son. He goes about it, but I can just, it's kind of one of those where I'd be curious because he's built for it, and I wonder when you're raised a certain way that like you're just conditioned to be like you have to love this. It's certain like he had to be coached in a way to enjoy this and to respond the way he does to intense boos, to rowdy crowds, that sort of thing. Where I would love to know how he grew up dealing with that and being prepared for that, because it seems like he's had that chip on his shoulder. Because I think Ray responded to one of these tweets about Luka and was just like, no one believed in Trey, to the effect. And that's, it seems like, I mean, that's your dad. That's what it's going to be. And you can't fault him for that. So I don't know. It's interesting. I wonder how that all worked when he was growing up. In terms of the draft though, I want to quickly ask Max about this. So Ty Washington got mocked to the Hawks, who is a Kentucky guard. Watched a lot of him this past year in the SEC. But what do you make of that fit in Atlanta? Do you like the Ty fit at all?
To be honest, I did not watch enough SEC basketball.
Oh no,
to know for sure.
Well, however, we were the best basketball conference this past year, so not only does it mean more in the football sense, but basketball as well.
Out in the NCAA tournament. I would say, here's the problem. I'm on such Hawks fatigue still. Like,
uh-oh.
You brought up Trey, and I was like, I just need a break from Trey. Like, you know, like watching Luka has really deflated my the wind in my sails, I would just say. Like, it's really hard watching him do this with that roster and thinking about what could have been. We don't need to go there, obviously. But in terms of the draft, like, I don't really know where you go with this roster, because I don't know what the roster is going to be, you know? Like, I don't know who stays. I don't know who goes. I don't know what your needs are. And, like, Ty Washington's a guard. And that's fine. But, like, he was a ball-dominant guard at Kentucky. What is, like, it just doesn't, like, you can't have any more ball-dominant guards unless they're coming off the bench, right? And they're keeping DeLon Wright, I would think. I don't know. I think that's more of a, like, he's going to go in this range, so let's mock him here fit. I just think you keep taking stabs at wings, and I guess bigs, depending on who you're keeping.
Well, I also am concerned because Nate clearly is not a rookie guy. Like, Nate is not – he played Jalen Johnson.
Like, what did Jalen Johnson – we don't know anything more about Jalen Johnson today than we did when he was drafted.
Right.
That's a problem.
So – I hesitate when I see the pick. I'm like, I don't even know if they want to keep that pick. Like, they might just try and trade the lottery pick or the draft pick for that, because I don't know. I forgot who it was. I think it was friend of the pod, Mark Schindler, on Locked On Hawks a week or two ago. I was on a run, and he pitched TJ Warren to the Hawks as someone the Hawks would go, like, buy low on his injury stuff, but he obviously knows Nate, and the Hawks need another guy who can create his own shot. They need more of those wings who can do that on their own to take pressure off Trey. And I thought about that, and I'm like, well, maybe that's the pick. You give Indiana, who's doing the full rebuild, you give up that pick, and you throw one of your contracts at TJ Warren. I wouldn't hate TJ Warren in this Hawks team.
Is he gonna guard anybody? Like,
who cares?
It matters.
We're going all
it
in,
matters.
Max. Come on.
Look at the teams. Look at the teams who are playing basketball still. Like, the Celtics, they guard the shit out of you. The Heat, they guard the shit out of you. Golden State's a different deal altogether, but they certainly play hard defensively. And Dallas, who is guarding the shit out of everybody right now. Obviously, game one aside, that's a different story. I'm deflated with all of this because you're handicapped by the fact that, like, Trey can never be even a Steph-level defender. And so you have to – everything has to be centered around, okay, well, like, how do you make an league-average NBA defense around him? And, yeah, adding, like, a Zach LaVine, you know, creator would be great in theory. He's not going to guard anybody. And if both your guards aren't going to guard anybody, you are screwed in the NBA. If you can't stop anybody at the point of attack, you have no chance. And so I think, like – I also think that there's, like, a less than a 50% chance they keep that pick. But every transaction going forward has to be, like, how do we build a league-average NBA defense at least? And I know that's not a fun thing to, like, talk about, but TJ Warren isn't that guy. I did want to talk about Ayton.
I love Ayton. I was just about to bring that up.
I kind of love the idea of Ayton. I kind of love it.
I, I think it'd be great. I think
what
it'd
if,
be great.
Chase, what if I had asked you that a year ago? You would have said, "There's no way in hell we have a chance to get Aiden."
No, I
wouldn't have wanted him. I was
that he didn't have a he didn't get the contract offer.
But that's all you need to know. When James Jones was like, "We're good on Mac."
No, that's not.
That's all you need to know for me.
That ownership is. Not
I don't trust anything that comes out of the Suns, man.
I just when you go to the finals and he's an important player and he has that kind of growth and development. And then just to not play in the second half based on the blow up that we still don't really know what happened there between him and Monty. I don't know. I'm so careful about the locker room dynamic here at this point where I don't know if I want our two highest paid players to be Trey and DeAndre Ayton. I don't know if I want that to be
That's
the case.
Fine, but Trey has to be one of them. So.
Yeah, Trey does. So the other guy has to be just
the perfect star that will never come up. I think part of the problem is that like,
Well, it's not the perfect star. It's just the perfect personality. I'm thinking personality too.
Everybody that you're going to get is going to have warts. Like whether it's Ben Simmons or DeAndre Ayton or Bradley Beal or literally anybody else. Zach LaVine.
You have to operate through not only the prism of like what is the perfect fit, but also mm-hmm. like what trade is actually possible.
Yeah.
And that list is maybe zero, right, where they overlap. An Ayton trade is actually legitimately possible. They don't want to pay him max money. They would prefer
they could
to
just
add,
get him on the open market.
They would prefer to add a few role players on mid-level contracts. They would love to have a Bogey Bogdanovich, DeAndre Hunter, someone like that. I think it makes
I would
sense.
Just sit on my play right now, because I don't really love any of the available guys, is sit on Zion. Just wait for it to continue to get worse. And then the Pelicans, who tasted playoff success this year, they're not going to wait on Zion anymore. If he's like, "I'm not playing. I'm not doing it."
What's he got to do? Put on 20 more pounds or something?
Whatever you got to do to get to Atlanta, man. Whatever you got to do. Like, I'm waiting on Zion. I think that's a possibility.
Is possible at the trade deadline, potentially, if you want to wait
that long.
That'd
be so electric.
Can you imagine the highlight factory with Zion and Trey? Like,
oh,
that's
my
just...
God. Could you imagine? Lob City.
That
mm-hmm. was
the
ultimate Lob City.
Entertaining 41-win team I've ever seen.
Yeah. I might move back to Atlanta just for that. Like
I go to a lot of games. You think it's fun with John Collins, but mm-hmm. holy shit. But
I'm waiting for
John
Zion. That like team. that's my take. Is as of right now, I've been thinking about that a lot and just
these assets are just every day they get worse.
Well,
like if Zion
what are you going to have to trade?
If
what
Zion
you
becomes
trade
available, every major market is in on him, right?
Well, if you're trading if you're trading for Zion and Onyeka is in the deal, you're probably having to give up Collins.
And Onyeka, Collins, DeAndre.
Two firsts.
And DeAndre, and then
and
probably
two
a couple firsts.
Mediocre firsts. Does that get that done?
But if he says, here's the other thing. What if Zion
Assuming
tells him,
enough.
I want to play with Trey?
Well, DeAndre Hunter would have just signed a contract, then he wouldn't be able to be traded.
Well, he's a sign-and-trade. Like, DeAndre is a sign-and-trade, where yeah. he is not a good... Like, he's an RFA this summer, so someone offers him the max, the Suns are like, we're not doing that, and then
that's it. I
can't run
it back with this roster. I can't do it.
You can't run it back, but I just want to be careful about who... Because this is it. Whatever you do this summer is just paramount to what happens with Trey in the next year or two. It's just, there's so much pressure, because if they're a play-in team again next year, then I think we're looking at Trey asking for a trade. Like, I think that's where you're looking at, because it's just guys know that it's just not fun. Like,
contracts
at that point,
don't mean what they used to, but it's
right. There's no loyalty.
Power,
he has no loyalty
power,
to Atlanta.
Players, why would he give a shit about Atlanta? I mean, I love the dude. I love the guy. He loves Atlanta right now.
Mm.
I'm coming to the conclusion that it's like there is a very good chance that he's not going to play his whole career in Atlanta. That's almost
oh
foolish.
No, absolutely
it's almost
not.
Foolish
yeah.
to think that. I mean, in this day and age of the NBA, Luka Doncic isn't going to play his whole career in Dallas. I'd be very surprised if he did that. It's just what the NBA is now. I mean, yeah. look at guys like Dwayne Wade. Dwayne Wade was a fixture in Miami for 15 years. Even mm-hmm. he left. He went to go play.
Well, the hope
Bulls.
Is you have them for their prime, and then whatever
yeah,
happens after they leave
yeah,
their prime.
But the thing is, but you
how
know
many
what I'm
people
saying?
Even like, remember that Dwayne Wade went to Chicago?
That's right.
I do.
Yeah,
I remember the Rondo, Wade, and Jimmy Butler
Derrick
photos.
Rose was on that team for all of 15 seconds.
The big three that everyone forgot. Quickly, Max, before you go, I wanted to do... oh, crap.
Check something out.
Oh, crap. I think something just... what just happened?
Uh-oh.
He's gone.
He disappeared.
quickly, he said, quickly, Max, and then cut out. The producer said
quickly,
no.
Mag, so that he just
oh, I'm back. Okay, oh, sorry, it just I hit the reader button accidentally instead of looking at the time, so it went into default reader for when I'm reading newspapers and stuff that have a really bad format and ads that pop up everything. I have that a reader extension that just crops it all out, and I accidentally clicked that. So apologies, but Max, quickly on yes, okay. I just want to double check, make sure it's still going. Season review. So I think we should do this each week for the Hawks. I wanted to ask you about Clint Capela. So I wanted to start there. I feel like you have some takes on Clint Capela. His season review, how would you review it?
You have to break it down between when he was healthy and when he's not. When he's healthy, he's good enough to anchor a good enough defense to make the Hawks a pretty good basketball team. He is not healthy enough to rely on him to do that all year and into the playoffs. I think a lot is asked of Clint Capela on this team that is kind of unfair to Clint Capela, the player, who is a really useful rim-running big who's good with Trey finishing lobs, but is not more – he is not Rudy Gobert in terms of turning mediocre perimeter defenders and making a good defense out of it. So it's not fair to ask him to be that. I feel exactly how I did it. I feel exactly about Clint Capela how I did end of last year, to be honest. I think he's a good big, and I also think that the Hawks would not shy away from upgrading at that position if the opportunity came about, perhaps with the actual Rudy Gobert. So, you know, that's my Clint Capela. I'm not saying it's a good idea. I'm just saying that I think the Hawks would do
that.
It
just wouldn't surprise you.
It would not surprise
me. Would it really not surprise you if they traded for Gobert?
Would not surprise me at all.
Nothing would surprise me at this point.
My pick is still Jordan Poole.
I
can see Ben Simmons coming to Atlanta. That would not surprise me in the slightest. People can roll their eyes. I mean, like, he would be very, very good in this offense.
I would need assurances that Ben really Simmons is going to play a basketball game again the rest of his life.
He'll be fine. He'll play.
Kyrie, is that a possibility still?
Stop. Kyrie, no. I would be very shocked if a guy like Kyrie Irving comes here. I'd also don't want to touch. I'd rather have Ben Simmons than Kyrie Irving.
Kyrie Trey backcourt would just break the internet, and I just
who's going to dominate the ball, man? Both of those guys are ball dominant guards. Ben Simmons is an elite like off player. Like, he can distribute at an effective level, and he's like the dude is one of the best perimeter defenders and interior defenders in the NBA.
We're going to start having conversations about Ben Simmons where people are going to be like, I kind of forgot what kind of player Ben Simmons is. Like,
it's going to happen. It's going to happen as soon as he starts playing. Once he plays next year.
Can we get there first before we talk about Ben Simmons again?
I know. Yeah. I'm just saying it would not surprise me. It would not surprise me if the Atlanta Hawks brought him in. And they could get him cheap. They can get him cheap. After what he did in Brooklyn, how they screwed them royally over with that.
He did nothing in Brooklyn.
Well, that's what I'm saying. After he did absolutely nothing.
Is he even in Brooklyn?
Everything.
Do we know? Are we know for sure that he made it to Brooklyn?
I don't even know if he actually traveled. Did he even go to Boston to travel with the team? I don't even know. But
my gut still tells me is there's a Golden State connection. Golden State's going to want to take care of Jordan Poole. They're like, we can't pay you, and we can't afford you with this locker room. And it's Jordan Poole in Atlanta. I don't know what it's going to be, but it will be Jordan Poole for like Hunter/Herder, and it might be Wiggins too. I could see Wiggins also being involved. It would not surprise me if that's the move, is we do some kind of thing with Golden State this offseason. That's my gut. My gut is it's a Golden State type thing.
I would streak if that happens. That'd be the greatest thing that ever happened to me.
Clip that.
There you go. Yeah, I'm jotting that down. You got to do
it. That's my sign off for the day.
Through the Highlands. Max Markovich, thank you as always for making the time. Garrett, we'll wrap up here. Max, I'll talk to you next
week. Thank you. Peace.
I'm just the Capela thing, man. I'm so curious because it seems like he's close to Trey. And the comments postseason and just kind of where he's at, I just get the sense that Capela and Trey have a very strong off the court connection. And I think Trey loves the pick and roll connection he has with Capela. I think he trusts Capela. Capela loves his role in Atlanta. There's no discrepancy. Like, the John Collins thing is different because John Collins wants an expansive role and wants to do more. And Capela, I think, being in the league for this long, knows what he is and knows how he can get paid and knows how he can just be a good teammate. And I think that's important, but I don't know. I'm curious. What did you make of his season? There's just going to be such an interesting thing. Even if you don't move around any major pieces, the Onyeka Capella thing isn't going anywhere. And I don't, that's just such a rocky thing to maneuver if you're Nate McMillan, because I don't know what you do, but at some point Onyeka has to be the starting five and you have to give him the majority of the minutes with Trey to see what you have there.
Yeah. I mean, that's the, on one hand, it's the, well, it's the upside and the downside of this situation is that the Atlanta Hawks can go in so many different directions. Literally every position, they could upgrade at every position. I could see them doing it this offseason, and it wouldn't, and not, like I said, nothing would surprise me at this point. Like, the only thing that would surprise me is if they, it shocked me, is if they traded Trae Young, which is never going to happen. At least not now. But Clint, I think Max hit it. It's like, you can only judge him for when he was healthy, and he wasn't healthy a lot this year. When he was very good. Like, he was at least within this team, he was a fixture of this squad. And the team won a lot of games when he was healthy. They were significantly better when he was actually playing good basketball. But at the end of the day, he's not a guy, like Max said, that is going to elevate your team and make you that much better every single time he rolls out onto the floor, because he's going to miss those two-footers, and he's not that long, so he's not going to win as many rebounds. So he loses key battles every now and then, and sometimes it really affects the outcome of the game. But he's fine. I would, if it was my preference, I would upgrade the perimeter and help him because he's a guy who clearly has that relationship with Trey, like you mentioned. But he's not the kind of guy who can pick up. He was asked to do a whole hell of a lot, and he's not a guy who's really all that suited to take a perimeter player who's streaking into the middle and just stonewall him. That's not what he does. He's just a physical guy who can beat somebody up. So if you get a guy who can stop on the perimeter, then you can see what this team was in 2021, where they were able to funnel somebody into him in an actual streamlined way, and they were able to get stops. It wasn't always flashy, but they were solid at doing that. This year, they really weren't able to do that, and they were asking Clint Capella to do way too much. And that showed, because this was a bad defensive team. And then on the offensive end they just weren't able to really pick up the slack. So if they moved Clint Capella, it wouldn't surprise me. But my preference, upgrade the perimeter and see what you can do there. Because DeAndre Hunter just hasn't gotten the job done effectively enough. Kevin Huerter, he's not a plus defender in the way that you need him to be. Bogey Bogdanović, he's been too streaky. So I need somebody out there who can really elevate this unit. I just don't know who it is. It could be an Andrew Wiggins. It could be, I know you hate this. It could be the guy who I will not mention up in Brooklyn. But that's where they really need to elevate their game, is because this is a team that allowed so many three-pointers. And that's the biggest need for this squad in this offseason. But it's going to be very interesting to watch.
For sure. What's not been very interesting to watch to this point is the 2022 Atlanta Braves. Garrett, in your estimation, why do you think the Braves are four games under 500 at this point in the year?
They can't put the bat on the ball. They are, 28th or something in batting average as a team. They're batting like 230 or something. Like, that's miserably bad. They're second in Major League Baseball in strikeouts. They have 360 strikeouts or something right now. They're two off the lead league, that you don't want, which is like 362. The pitching has been mediocre, and the bullpen's not healthy. It's a calamity of errors right now, and it's also the fact that they've played a lot of very good baseball teams. They're coming off one of the most difficult stretches the first part of May. I actually just put out an article about this earlier today, where you played the Mets to start the month. You have Mets and then Padres and then Brewers and then Padres and Red Sox and then Brewers again. And they come out of that 7-8. And so that's okay. Like, they kind of treaded water against some of the best teams in Major League Baseball. That's okay. I can live with that. But what's coming next is something where the Braves really, really need to take advantage and string together some wins. I mean, they have two series wins in 12 opportunities, and they need to start stringing together some wins, but they have a chance to do that. They're going down to Miami, very winnable series. Then they have the Phillies, important series. We'll see what they can do there. I mean, it's a division rival in the Phillies. It's hot and cold generally with them. It's like any division rival. Mm-hmm. But then after that, you have the Diamondbacks, you have the Rockies, you have the Pirates. Who else am I thinking? I'm just going off the top of my head. But like those are a lot of series where you could really make some damage. The Oakland A's are another team.
Mm-hmm.
Those are winnable series. You need to win games against those teams, and then you can really start gaining ground in the East. Because if you drop a lot of these games, if you come out of this stretch at a 500 mark, if you go, I don't know, 11-11 or 11-12 or something in that range, you're going to turn around and you're going to be 10, 11 games behind the Mets in this division. And I'm not going to count on the Mets dropping games like they did last year. I'm not going to count on the Phillies dropping games like they did last year, because this is 2022. This is not 2021. I'm so sick of people talking, oh, well, they did this last year and look what happened there. Bullshit. It's not last year. This is a completely different season. Baseball's a fickle thing. And if they don't turn around quickly, and I mean like right now, very soon, this is going to be a lost season for the Atlanta Braves. And it's by virtue of them not swinging the ball, swinging and hitting the ball. They're swinging and missing far too often, and they're not putting the ball in play. So the pitching has started to come back, but now the hitting sucks. So Austin Riley, Marcelo Zuna, all these guys, Adam Duvall and Ozzie Albies especially have been miserable. I mean, Duvall is below the Mendoza line right now. And he's probably one of the streakier players in Major League Baseball. So maybe that means that he's all of a sudden going to go bat 500 and hit 7 home runs over the stretch. Who knows? Mm. Because that's what he does. But look, just win some baseball games. This is your chance.
Yeah, it's everybody's below 100 in WRC plus. Matt Olson's been, you know what's funny is he's not been great, but he's been good. Like Matt Olson, I just feel like is just going to be a good player for a long time, where a good WRC plus 133, he's been great. Like I shouldn't do that. He's been very good and he's solid and he's going to be fine, but he's not Freddie Freeman. Like he's just not.
And there is a drop. You're paying him to be better than very good though.
Yeah, but it's just probably not going to happen. So I don't know. You kind of need
that yet.
It's Riley and Olson who have done the Lord's work in the middle of this lineup. And Darnell, who has cooled off. He's under 100 now in WRC plus. But I don't know. Like you talked about, there's just everyone lost the Rosario versus Soler conversation from this offseason because Soler is back to what he's been previously in Miami, unfortunately, but he got paid, and Soler, the memories will always be there. Rosario, obviously, you got nothing there, and you picked Rosario, and probably won't get anything there. Dickerson was a miss. Demerit is cooled off significantly. He's not an answer. But like you mentioned, you need somebody like Ozuna to figure it out. You need Duvall to figure it out, because if not, this season will get away from you, and the Mets are 12 games over 500 right now. The Braves are 8 games back. They still have a 63% chance of making the playoffs per Fangraphs. So with the expanded playoffs, I think the Braves are – there's no reason to panic. But to speak to your point about this is not last year, I think that's important that fans have to – I didn't agree with this, and I think a lot of folks – I don't really want to single anybody out, but there was a lot of don't panic in May. Don't panic in June, because look at last year. We were fine. We struggled out of the gate. We made some summer trades, and then bam, we took off. That's not a formula that works out very often. Like that's an amazing run. And we struck lightning in a bottle post Acuna's injury. And that's an amazing run that will never happen again. But generally speaking, when you dig this hole, like the Braves have dug, like the Red Sox have dug in the AL East, that means you're probably in really bad shape. And that probably means that it's going to be very, very difficult and very unlikely that you get out of that hole. And this might mean the Braves have to be more active than they wanted to be this summer. And for folks who are wondering, like, is it Drew Waters? Is it Michael Harris? Michael Harris is probably not playing anything this year. He hasn't even taken a AAA at bat yet. So if you're waiting on him or you're waiting on Waters or whoever, like, the saviors aren't there. And they're not in the minors ready to go. So I don't know. I think the division, I would be surprised if they were in play for that come October. But I do think the wild card, one of the wild card spots is right there. The NL West being as good as they have been to this point is a little concerning, but I mean, this makes a pretty fair amount of sense that they're right there with the Marlins, who have an unreal pitching staff, and they're just so good. on that front, that they're going to be a problem there. And the Phillies, whatever, they just keep throwing more money and keep trying to throw what they can. But
I don't know, most money for an 81-81 record that I've ever seen.
Right, and Harper being hurt them as well. Yeah. But I don't know. The Braves are going to have an interesting summer, and they've got to figure it out. The offense, someone has to pick it up. Like, someone in this lineup outside of Olsen and Riley have to be consistent. And you need Acuna healthy, too. Like, Acuna just getting 100% right would also change a lot of this.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not calling it by any stretch. I mean, it is May. I mean, but I hate that. I do hate that excuse. It's early. It's early. They'll figure it out. No. This is a team that's coming off the World Series. This is a team that should be winning a lot of baseball games. Mm. All right. So I'm not going to give them any excuses. They're paid way too much money to be getting excuses like that. You need to be hitting the damn baseball. But look, this team is all the talent in the world. This is a team that could and should get it right. And it's just a streaky bunch. It's a streaky bunch, and if they can get that WRC plus right back over 100, there's anybody in this lineup can do that. So it's still one of the most potent in baseball. This is still a team that can literally go out tonight and drop 25 runs on somebody. That wouldn't surprise me. Obviously 25 runs would surprise anybody. That's not my point. What I'm saying is that this is a team that can jump on anybody. We've seen it happen this year. What was it? Who were they playing? They scored 16 runs or something just out of nowhere. It was against the Mets, I think. And this is what they can do to you. Yeah, it's like early in the season, like April or something like that. But
they're not the Tennessee Vols. We're winning
27-2. I think they outscored their football team. But
2020 version, not the 2021 version. Hold on.
Okay. All right.
People forget that we're in everything school.
You are a something school. You're still trying to figure out how to be a football school. But
I think we're okay. I don't know. Nico!
It depends on who you start at quarterback next year, but. The Braves will be fine, but they need to be better than fine. That's it. And I think that this stretch is going to be very telling. I think the next time we have this podcast, we will have a very good idea of what this stretch is going to look like. They need to win these. They need to beat the Marlins, and they need to beat the Phillies. They need to win both of those series. And then if they do that, then we're looking at some very bad baseball teams who the Braves shouldn't be playing. So we'll see what happens. The next 2 weeks are going to be very important. I want to see what they do in the last half of the month.
Absolutely. Garrett Chapman, we can check you out on 92.9 The Game. Follow you on Twitter at GChapATL. Anything you'd like to plug as we wrap up here on this fine Friday afternoon?
Just pushing out articles, man. Having some fun, man. I'll be up at Flowery Branch all the last part of in June, really. That's when I really start picking up there. I'm really excited for that. So all the Falcons coverage you can ever want, I'll be pushing all of that out.
There you go. Keep up the good work, sir. Where's SPF 100? I don't know about this SPF 50, 75 business that you've thrown out, but
I gotta get a base tan, you know?
You don't have a base tan? No, I don't have a base tan.
I've never had a base tan in my life, so
yeah.
I don't know what that is. I mean, my pale ass. I'm the closest thing we have to the moon on this planet.
There you go. I mean, my fiance is half Mexican, and just. We'll be out in the sun for 30 minutes and just already a different shade.
My girlfriend's Italian, so I completely understand.
Yeah, I can't do that.
Let's go to a pool. Let's have a pool day on Saturday. And I'm like, are you sure?
It's long sleeve season, man. You got to get the sun hat like I do, and then it's long sleeve season. Legs, I can be fine, but long sleeve, man. I got to do it. The Dry Fit Columbia fishing shirts, that's the way to go in the summer in the South, man.
Love those.
I stocked up on them. Belk has a sale right now, so go run in there. I don't know if it's for...
I got an hour or two to spare right here before we have NBA action, so...
There you go. Isn't it later? Isn't it like an 8:30 tip tonight?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it's kind of later because it's on the West Coast, but...
Yeah.
I don't know.
Garrett Chapman, always a pleasure. Max Markovich, miss you guys. I'm gonna jump back into the PGA Championship a little bit. The Tiger, Spieth, Rory pairing been great all day.
I don't think you get any better than that in terms of golf. That's awesome. Did you see the story about the 10th alternate or something like that who made it and just by the skin of his teeth?
I did not.
Dude, I'll send you the story. We'll do that off air. We'll talk more about it. Cool. It's pretty cool.
All right. Garrett Chapman, talk to you next week. All right. That'll do it for the Atlanta Sports Guys here on part two of the Saturday, May 21st, 2022 edition here on the Chase Thomas podcast on the Blue Wire Pod Network. Go check out all of my other shows this week if you have not already done so. cornucopia of shows starting in the middle of the week, including the former UGA and Indiana head coach Tom Crean was on this very program this week. Great interview with him. But a multitude of shows here on this very feed on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or get your podcasts that you can go circle back and check out if you missed them earlier in the week. As we are back on the saddle here now that this semester is wrapped up here on Rocky Top. So big things in store this summer. New episode coming tomorrow. Sports reporters, we have indeed reassembled. That's coming on this very feed tomorrow, so watch out for that. But two-parter today in the books here on the Chase Most Podcast. Hope you guys enjoyed both of these episodes. I greatly appreciate you checking them out. Per usual, go subscribe to me on sportsrenaissanceman.substack.com. It's easy. It's just typing in your email and never missing any of my written content. Email me at chasethomaspodcast@gmail.com. Tweet at me at @chase_Thomas. And like the Facebook page at facebook.com/ChaseThomasWriter. All right, new episode tomorrow. Finish up the Warriors win. What a game. Just what a game. That was a lot of fun. Basketball, it's good and very fun. So excited to see how the rest of that series goes after Golden State goes up 2-0. But yeah, all right. That'll do it. I'll be there. How'd I do?
Nicely done, nephew. Chase Thomas Podcast. Hell yeah.